If it wasn't for cancer, I wouldn't have changed. And I actually don't know who that person was or who that person would have become. More dangerously so, who that person would have become and influenced. Because when you have power and position, then you could have influenced other people. I thank cancer for giving me lessons that I would never have been able to learn. And I thank cancer for letting me see I got a second chance at life. So I'm very grateful for that. But yeah, don't darken my door again. Thanks.
Guys, thank you, and welcome to another Focus Talk, the latest in a series of conversations with leaders, change makers, and innovators. Investec Life is launching a very brave and candid campaign that addresses women's health. It centers on stories of women from Investec who have fought and won battles against cancer. And today's guest is one such woman. Not only has she beaten breast cancer, but she's also built a very successful business, and she's become a recognized authority on digital media. Her name is Yavi Madurai, and you've likely seen her on TV or heard her on radio talking about social media trends and best practices for business, or you may have come across some of her tips on how to protect your kids online, which is something we're going to cover today. When Investec Life put Yavi forward as a guest for Focus Talks, I jumped at the opportunity to interview her for two reasons. Firstly, I was diagnosed with early stage breast cancer at the age of 35, and I had a double mastectomy in 2016, and I find her story truly uplifting and inspirational. And secondly, I work on the digital content team at Investec, so I'm passionate about the power of digital storytelling, and so here we are today. Can we start with your breast cancer journey and the moment you first realized you had it? You were 28. It was probably the last thing on your mind.
For sure.
So how did you pick up that there was a problem?
It was very simple. I wasn't doing breast self-examinations. We didn't know about it at the time, to be very honest with you. It was the world pre-social media. Can you imagine a world without social media? But yes. communication, especially about breast cancer or cancer in general, media didn't necessarily cover it. It's something we didn't speak about as humanity. So this is 2003 I'm talking about. So having a shower, something was sticking out of my boob, like. And I kind of thought, okay, that's weird. What is that? Looked down, and there was literally something sticking out the side. And put my arm down, and it went away. Picked my arm up, nothing there. So I honestly thought I was having a moment of insanity. And I, in inverted commas, I forgot about it for a couple of days. I mentioned to my husband somewhere along the line, you know, I found this thing. And he's a banker. So he was like, that's ridiculous. Go to the doctor. What is wrong with you? In his general way. Nedbank had a medical center, all of that. Went through all of that. Went to the doctor. Yeah. A couple of tests later, mammogram, biopsy. It was confirmed on a Friday. At 3:02, it's the last time I wore a watch because time means something different to me these days. I took off my watch after that. 3:02 p.m. I was told you have breast cancer.
Sure. I get all teary.
Because you know how it feels.
Yavi, you had no family history of breast cancer. So what was the response from your family?
So at the time, and things that have changed, well, I hope they have changed, but things have changed from a media perspective. At the time, it was seen as a white woman's disease. So Indian women, black women, colored women, blue women, purple women didn't get breast cancer because whatever media coverage there was, it was around a white person or a white woman. We know people who have had breast cancer, but the Indian community whispers about it in halls because it's seen as a curse or something, I don't know, at the time. So first of all, there was that. The second aspect of it was, so like, do you speak about it, don't you speak about it? And being the rebel that I am, obviously I wanted to speak about it. The second aspect of it was that my grandmother was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma in that same year. So the fact that the two of us had cancer, didn't matter that the cancers were different, it changed the dynamic of my family from there on. we became more focused on the power of womanhood and the power of sisterhood within a family.
And I think when I chatted to you last week, you described the way that your gran took yes. her diagnosis yes. very differently to the way that you took it. Could you talk us through that?
Sure. My granny if she was born at a different time, she would have been a maniacal CEO. And very, very focused on specific things, very driven, very determined. She said things to me like, when you want something here, you aim higher so that you achieve it anyway. And if you don't do something properly, you don't do it at all. It was years later, I was sitting in an MBA class, and I was like, I've been in an MBA class since I was three. You know, because it was just the way that she said things. So this is the person that we are talking about from a context perspective. And then when cancer happened, she went all negative. All negative. She fought with God. She fought with people. She fought with everyone. She in her world, it was like, after everything you have done to me, and I have been strong, and I have been positive, why would you do this? So I saw that, and when I was diagnosed, I just couldn't see because she raised me to be a positive, strong, independent woman, and now. So that impacted me hugely, and I couldn't. So I couldn't do that. I couldn't become that.
And in your journey, you know, you pretty much had to go through everything. You had a partial mastectomy, chemotherapy, radiation. How did you deal with this time in your life?
I coined a phrase at the time, and it's a good context to start. I coined the phrase that my friends became the family that God forgot to give me, because we had literally just moved to Johannesburg. There wasn't much family from a support perspective. It was literally just Ashton and I and lots of friends. The chemo, I had the top grade.
Fun one.
Shall we call it? They walk towards you. They are in full medical regalia in terms of coverage. Even their faces are closed. And they have got a pouch in their hand that's black and whatever color, there's different chemos, and it's got skull bones on it. And that is going in your body, but they are walking around like that.
They really need to work on their packaging.
And their marketing and branding, for sure. Their packaging needs to change. But that was chemo. The thing I didn't tell you about chemo when we met the last time was that we used to have eating parties. So
sounds like a normal day in my life.
but this was it was dark. It was dark and funny all at the yes. same time. So we used to literally have McDonald's and Black Forest cakes while we're having chemo. Because we all knew we were yeah. gonna be running to the bathroom and throwing it up anyway. So yeah, that was chemo. Sure. However, the dark side to chemo is that it has an impact on your body that you can't explain.
Yeah.
Chemo and then subsequent radiation literally kills you from the inside. What cancer doesn't do to you, chemo does to you in terms of killing poison, but it kills you in the process. Yeah. And then radiation burns you from the inside. So your skin turns, your everything, eyes, tongue, fingers, fingernails, everything turns black. Sure. So lost hair, changed a funny color. It was when my husband and I were married for 7 years at the time. So our 7 year itch was very different.
Yeah.
I stopped chemo on a Thursday, and the effects, whatever the effects were, used to kick in on a Friday afternoon. My boss, is she here?
Ruth.
My boss was Ruth Bateman. I had never met a woman at that stage in the banking industry that stood up for other women. And then I met Ruth. And everything changed. And it must have been a spiritual connection of some kind that I had to work for her when I went through this. Like, I have no doubt that there was a reason for it.
So a friend of mine who underwent chemo described it as the worst morning sickness you've ever had combined with the worst hangover you've ever had.
For sure.
But for many women, the hair loss is the big thing.
Yeah.
And you took it very differently.
Yeah, so life was very different in 2003 for any of you that remember 2003. We weren't as open, as free, and as accepting of different alternative looks to beauty, shall we call it. So bald women were not seen, you were just seen as a thug, like, it was just hectic. Yeah. So also, I put on 25 kilos because I got 10 years worth of steroids or cortisone within a period of 3 months. So, and I gave you the context is that I was the 9th of January I started chemo and my birth, and I was a size 6, and my birthday is the 28th of April and I bought a size 16 skirt. So, so first chemo happens, 2 weeks later the hair falls out, and we had made plans because I was very much about this. Had the wig made, so it was waiting and prepared. The day we went to go and have my head shaved, we saw this lady next to me, an oldish lady. So she looks at me, they're shaving my head, and she's sitting next to me. She's like, "How dare you? How dare you shave your head with that lovely hair? And I am dying for hair." And you know, my hairdresser wanted to kill her, but we survived. But then somebody else walked past and said, "Ah, how cool!" So I thought to myself, if someone sees this as cool, and I forget the old lady next to me, and if I have to deal with myself, and Ashton has to deal with myself bald, and thank God my mother had a cesarean section, so my head is perfectly round, then maybe I can I can pull this off, right? So we walked from one end of Four Ways Mall, and I counted. All of two people kind of looked at me, and they didn't look at me in a funny way. They were looking at me like, "Oh, wow." And I thought, I can do this. And that's until I got to Nedbank for meetings on the Monday morning with a bald head, that normally women have to be subjected to looking at cleavage and other things. In my case, it was like, here, my eyes are here, not here. So, yeah, it was an interesting time walking around bald in Johannesburg. Fat and bald. So I owned it. And no hair. So I didn't even have all the eyebrows and the eyelashes. But my husband probably put up with the most. He's the one that kind of had to, you know, walk around with a fat bald chick on his arm.
Let's talk about that, because often sort of the partners and the families of someone who's got cancer, kind of their needs are often put aside because they don't want to put extra stress on you now. And how did he cope? How did he deal with everything?
So Ashton doesn't deal with crisis well. Mm-hmm. He's going to hate me for saying that, but it's the truth. And I am the pillar of strength. So I'm the one that unravels his knot that he gets into when it comes to crisis. So obviously with me being the problem or the crisis, it took on a very strange dynamic in our household. One of the ladies that used to constantly interview me, she was like, "I'm so sick and tired of interviewing you. I'm going to interview Ashton." So I'm like, "He's not going to talk. Like, good luck to you." So she did, and she obviously found a way to get him to talk. But 2 years after the cancer, that whole journey, I'm reading the newspaper. He's sitting and watching sports. And I finally found out what he felt and thought. So that is, our bond got stronger during it, just because we could speak about death in a very realistic way, which most families can't. Most couples don't or can't. We had to. And now we speak about it very nonchalantly, because that is life. Life, tomorrow you can be gone. So that is what changes human beings, and that is what changes the dynamic of a relationship.
And so you've been through all of this, and then they tell you you can never have children at the age of 28, 29.
So yes, the child story. I was very focused on my career. If you met me around 25, 26 years old, I was going to be the CEO of a bank. By the time I was 35, that was done. In my head, the box was ticked. There was no, it wasn't negotiable in my head. So I would work days, nights, whatever I needed to do in order to be able to achieve my goals. For me, my goals were everything career-wise. I had a very supportive husband who was ambitious himself, so we were fine. I put off having a child because my career came first. And I'm not afraid to say that now because it's a lesson that I had to learn. And I was very arrogant. I was extremely egotistical is not even a good enough word to use because, you know, I felt I could do anything. It was the nature of working in corporate banking at the time. And the day that I was diagnosed, when those words were said at 3:02, you have breast cancer, the response from me was, not how long do I have to live, am I going to die, like whatever, the normal questions, was like, but I haven't had a child as yet. It was like, how dare you give me that news, and I haven't had a child as yet. You know, the arrogance even showed then. But, yeah, so we waited until remission, and then, well, remission, it was said, too much damage to your body. I said, but other people have had. And the response to me was, but your body doesn't work normally. Yeah, so I made peace with it. I didn't want to be one of those women, and I'm not judging anyone who does, but I didn't want to be one of those women that were consumed by the fact that I can't have a child. It consumed my life. It was made me upset to see another person pregnant, or I didn't want to be one of those women. So I took a week off. I mourned. I cried. I did what I needed to do. I went to a therapist. I did whatever it was, and I made peace with it. Fast forward 2 years, can't have children. So I book a VIP trip to Old Trafford because that's Manchester United. We have to go and kiss the ground and do all of those things. I don't understand it, but yeah. Book the trip, buy a house. House is so not child friendly. Buy a 2-door car. It's like we're living the dream, the life without children. Yes. And building a house, if any of you have built a house, you know the drama about builders and things not on time. But I turned into a super VITCH of note. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I was 4 months pregnant when I walked into the doctor's office to say, I think menopause has hit because my mood swings are really hectic. And you told me I'm going to have early menopause, and I think it's time for us to face facts. Just tell me what to do, to how to deal with it, because I need to live my life. And she was like, okay, let's go do the test. Internal. No, you're 4 months pregnant. So I'm like, oh, you're pregnant. I'm like, no, that's a tumor. She's like, tumors don't have heartbeats. I'm like, medical science, according to my oncologist, still cannot be explained because he said to me, how did this happen? I said, shall I draw you pictures? Like, you told me this can't happen. What must I do? So, yes, and we are celebrating her 12th birthday on Sunday.
That's amazing.
Yes. Sure. She doesn't know she's a miracle, though. She doesn't act like it.
She is 12, so that's probably explains it. So, I mean, you did touch on it, but you never come out of a cancer experience as the same person. How did it change you from, you know, sort of career climbing? You said you were arrogant. How did it change you afterwards?
It changed me from two perspectives, is that I wanted to have a career or business, whatever it was, but with purpose, to be able to do something that is impactful in some shape or form. So that's the first thing. The second thing is sisterhood, thing that we talk about, and it's a buzzword, and it's an Instagram, you know, thing, and it's a social media angle, and we talk about it. But for me, it became a legacy. Is that as women, we are very, and this started before, it started in my career. Remember I told you about the story about Rue? And when I met Rue, my thing, I obviously left Nedbank. I resigned and left Nedbank and went elsewhere. But that stayed with me. So I made it my duty after that to become Rue, in inverted commas, in terms of always making sure that we don't stab other women in the back. It was actually the opposite. Is that how do we create a culture and a mindset and a focus on creating that woman empowerment? And how do we speak about it in normal terms? So sisterhood now, from a business perspective, family, friends, everything, means it's possibly my entire thing aside from my family, Ashton and Tanith. But and a sister is here today to support me, because cancer, breast cancer, we don't understand how it impacts us as women. We are expected to be normal. We are expected to go to work. We are expected to do those kind of things. And I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm saying to you, it's the woman in our lives sometimes that expect you to be fine, not us, because we are fine. So you expect the next woman to be fine. And that, for me, needed to change. So those are the two fundamental things that impacted back then what the rest of my life needed to mean.
And did that sort of drive you then to move out of corporate and found your own business with Black Box Theory?
Obviously, it was also time. I had a three-year-old, and I begged God for this child and miracle, and now I'm 200 days away from this child. I started Black Box Theory. It's a management consultancy. We do digital transformation. We do really cool things. You know, I have a hacker that works for me that hacks my daughter's account because, hello, a teenage child or preteen. Bots and chatbots but we also do things in terms of brand and reputation management and those kind of things. Social media became my thing, just from a media perspective. So it's one aspect of what we do. But social media gave me a voice, and it gave me an understanding of how the world works. And most importantly, social media is about human connection.
So you went from this very hectic job, and then you moved and sort of set up your own business, which a lot of people say is much harder. It's actually more stressful. And then you spoke to me the other day about sort of newfound spirituality that you had.
Yeah.
And that you wake up at 4 a.m. every morning to meditate, which just blows my mind.
But sure.
did you not worry about the breast cancer coming back or anything like that from this increased work that you took on?
So you and I are forever bonded with our pink ribbon sisters in terms of the fact that that act hangs above our head every day. And the thing is that if we live in fear about it coming back, we can't live. Whatever time I had left, remember I said to you, there needed to be a legacy. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, Ashton is 30, he'll get married, my parents will miss me forever. But what is left of me? Yeah. There's nothing here. And obviously from a child perspective, now that's changed. But in terms of legacy, like mm-hmm. true legacy. So I think to kind of consolidate the past 10 years or 9 years of business and entrepreneurship is that, first of all, you are never not at work. So you are thinking about work when you go to sleep, when you get up, you're thinking about invoices, money, no money, permanently clients. You go from having one boss to 5,000 bosses, because when every client phones at the same time to see you, you find a way to cut yourself up in 10 pieces. So entrepreneurship has created an entire different dynamic for me. It is the hardest thing I have ever done in my life, including cancer.
Wow.
Faith and spirituality is more important to us than specific religion, purely because we have two religions in our household. It coexists, it's coinciding 23 years later. Spirituality is about human connection. It's about understanding that depth, that authenticity, that humanness in ourselves. And I immediately know, you can offer me millions of rands, and it's very tempting from a business perspective. But if I don't trust you, there's something about you, you and I will never see each other again. The spirituality starts at 4 a.m. Meditation gives me the peace to be able to deal with whatever is coming during the day. And some of the things are quite huge. But I start at 4 a.m., gym, and then, you know, life happens. So I find a way to be able to make sure that impactfully my spirituality runs through myself, my business, my business partners, the people that I do business with, the people that I collaborate with. I don't see it as business partnerships. I see it as collaboration. And I have a true belief in wealth and abundance for all. There is enough for everyone. We don't have to fight. And that becomes, you know, the core of this. And digital transformation, we all hear 4IR from a technology perspective. Digital transformation is changing the face of the world. And in the future, we are going to be able to have opportunities that we never had before. So all the previous revolutions before the first to the third, you saw emerging technology, emerging economies like China, India, take advantage of those industrial revolutions. Africa never joined those revolutions. It's now our time, if we choose.
And, you know, continuing on that theme, you're passionate particularly about the impact on women that this new technology can have.
Sure. In our country, because of, like, the poorest people live the furthest away from the economic centers, which means transport costs, those kind of things, are hugely challenging. So you look at women, and I'm specifically talking women, that are in difficult situations, and when I say difficult situations, I mean financially and economically. Economic emancipation is something that is an outcome or a result of digital transformation and those kind of things. Women who didn't have access, who didn't have, whether it be, you know, because they are super wealthy, living in, you know, 20 million rand houses, but are not financially independent, or whether it's the young woman that is sitting in rural Mpumalanga that has no way of coming to Joburg to be able to come and find a job. So it's the extreme cases and in between. Is that all of a sudden the expanse of technology allows them to be able to access things, whether it is via social media, because that becomes our door, our entry point, is that everyone knows about social media, they enter through social media. There's approximately 3,000 Instagram, online, informal, beauty and fashion shops on Instagram in South Africa alone. That means that we're not even talking sports gear, we're not even talking everything else. Women's clothes, shoes, and makeup. 3,000 Instagram. These are people from Northern Cape, Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga. They have economically emancipated themselves. This, and I'm just giving you an example. Now, that's not 4IR technically, but what happens when we have technology like 5G?
Very, very powerful. Yeah, I've got to go back to the hacker hacking your child's social media account. Okay, there's lots of parents in the room.
Sure.
You know, my 7-year-old's addicted to Minecraft already. It's quite terrifying. I mean, yeah. We've spoken about the opportunities.
Sure.
But how do you monitor that as a parent? And, you know, what advice do you have for us?
I work in this space, and one day I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to fight this battle. There's a guy that has the ability to do this. So she knows. She knows. She knows that don't even try creating fake accounts because we will find you. I don't understand why parents are fearful of going into online spaces. So they'll be like, I'm not on Facebook. Why? Your child is there. If your child is there, you need to be there. If anything, just to stalk. You don't even have to be friends. You just need to stalk. Go and spend time understanding how this works, how those platforms work. I am 44 years old, so I am not the generation of digital natives or social media. So how did I get to this point? The point I'm trying to make is that when you are interested enough to be able to make sure that you know what's happening out there. So in short, there are apps to monitor your child from a social media perspective, from a location perspective. So you don't even have to put chips or things on their phone. You literally have to have their phone's details. It Bluetooths, it picks it up. It can pick it up anywhere in the world. Constantly read about what is happening in the world of online media. What kind of phishing, PH, phishing is happening with these young girls. How are pedophiles now changing the game? Because now access is, you know, access is completely different. But be in the know. The moment you are in the know, the moment you are Googling how to keep my daughter safe, how to do this, how to do that, a simple thing. Do you do a reverse image search of your children's faces on Google once a month, once every 6 months to see if their faces are not being put on child porn pornography yeah. sites? So just understand that we live in different times. If we live in a boomed estates, security guards, security things on our windows, doors, alarm systems, whatever, why are we not putting the equivalent of that on the expensive devices that we hand our children. Have you put in safe search? Have you checked? Have you got family accounts? She's not allowed to have her own account, and if she does, you need to find it. And snooping, you're a parent.
You're allowed.
Snoop, you are allowed.
So something that I'm grappling with, what is the optimal age to give your child a smartphone?
For me, it's a case of you know your child. Who knows your child better than the parent? And we must get out of this habit of judging another parent. If a parent gives a child a phone earlier than they should have it, what does that mean? Because you know your circumstances. But then you put the security and the alarm systems and whatever else on those phones. Or there's the phones that don't have access to all of these kind of platforms. They literally do WhatsApp and make telephone calls. Then by all means, give your child a device to empower you from a safety perspective. This isn't about other people. It's about making sure that you and your child are safe.
Yavi, obviously you've built up your big following on social media and it's helped you as an entrepreneur. Could you give us some pointers on kind of building your own brand online?
Building a brand on social media is very simple. It's about three things. And please hear me. It's about authenticity. Don't be something you're not. Social media will find you if you are not authentic. It will see you. You will see yourself if you are not authentic. If you are not, so from a brand building perspective, if you are into too much advertising, so when I say advertising, even individuals like to advertise themselves. The moment you take too many selfies, the moment you take too much, me, we live in the I era, the moment you do all of that and you are not making it about your audience, you lose it. The next thing is that it's about added value. So if you are building a brand and you want to build it and grow it, you need to make sure that whatever you put out, it's one simple thing. It's never about you. It's always about them. Give, Bonang says, give the people what they want. It's simple.
Yavi, I think we are pretty much close to the end. I just got one final question for you.
Sure.
I mean, we've spoken about your journey today. Would you go through it all again to be where you are today?
Yes and no. Yania. yes, because, and I've said this many times already, if it wasn't for cancer, I wouldn't have changed. And I don't know who that person, I actually don't know who that person was, or who that person would have become. More dangerously so, who that person would have become and influenced. Because when you have power and position, then you could have influenced other people. So, yes, for that reason. No, in the sense that who would have wanted to deal with the suffering, right? And who wants to live with an axe over their head? But I thank cancer. I thank cancer for giving me lessons that I would never have been able to learn. And I thank cancer for letting me see I got a second chance at life. So I'm very grateful for that. But yeah, don't darken my door again. Thanks.
Done. Thank you so much, Yavi, for coming and chatting to
Thank
us.
Thank you. It was lovely.
It was lovely. It was great.
And I wish you many, many,
Thank
many
you.
Happy years.
You too.
Healthy.
You too. Cheers. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave.